This talk was recorded at Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society in Los Angeles and is freely offered for your enjoyment. For more information, please visit againstthestream.org.
I have many things to say to you this evening. But before I begin my spiel, I'd like to allow my co-teachers to introduce themselves and to also welcome you. Try it again.
Hello? Fuck it.
Hands off.
Welcome, everyone. Can you hear me in the back?
Push it again. It's going to have a green light on top.
So, my name's Matthew, and I'm going to take the mic. Wanted to say hello. I know many of you, and a lot of real strong, positive associations, seeing your faces. This is a special kind of environment in which to practice. The environment is different for many of us, many people here in a silent retreat for the first time. But for all of us, we're here in one way or another to practice freedom. And the way that we practice freedom is not squandering any suffering. That the ordinary approach to the way we live is to try and sort of envision our life as a kind of labyrinth course, and we are finding our way to safety and comfort all the time. And in retreat, we're invited to relate in a very different way to our moment-by-moment experience. And the way we can relate is to learn from everything that's arising. As Dharma practice, as meditation practice deepens, we learn from more and more of our life. We don't allow any suffering to pass without learning from it. Because what we come to see is that suffering will either open or close the heart. It will do one or the other. And here we have the great fortune to have so much taken care of, and to have an environment where we're committing to non-harming, where we can actually relax so deeply that we can learn from everything. And so the invitation is that when the mind reaches a kind of reaches an edge, and we'll reach our edge many times, you may have already, but when the mind reaches an edge and says, you know, I'm not willing to learn from this is just suffering, and my job is to escape it, The invitation is to learn there too. So that all of this can be a kind of softening of the heart, even when it's difficult. So, I think, just in closing, we probably all have a sense of what we want to learn, what we want to get from the retreat, why we're here. And the suggestion is to hold that really lightly. Because when we start a week like this, we actually can't really know what is most urgent for us to learn. So please be open to that. And insofar as we can do that, this will be a profoundly valuable way to spend a week. I'm delighted to be spending it with you. This is a very, very beautiful process that unfolds with these retreats.
And hello again. Second hello. My name is Kira, and I've come down from Vancouver, Canada, to be here. So I don't know nearly as many of you as some of the people sitting up here. But it's certainly, for me, a joyful thing to join you all and for us to practice together. I'm really looking forward to it. One of the kinds of practice that I'll be bringing for this week will be movement practices, and I wanted to tell you just a few things about those classes or those periods, what they might be like. It is and it is not going to be yoga. It is and is not going to be meditation. It's somewhere in the middle. There'll be times of very gentle stretching and releasing some of the physical stress, deeply grounded in mindfulness, quite slow. So I'm afraid if anybody's used to Bikrams and you were hoping to get a good workout, I won't be able to offer you that. You'll have to try that on your own. But there is another building across the way from here. I'm not sure how to give it a very accurate description.
Straight back.
And you don't need a yoga mat. You don't need to be flexible. You don't even need to be uninjured. Everything we do will be very open to and accessible to everyone. And you're welcome to join me every day. It's on the schedule what time the movement classes are. And I wanted to also expand from a little bit of what Matthew said. He said that you know what you're hoping to get from being here and you know why you came. Something like that. And I was thinking of something that I read that Thich Nhat Hanh, who's a Vietnamese Buddhist monk, had written. He said that when we are on the ocean without a map, we can use the North Star to guide our way. We can use it, fix our direction by the North Star, this unmoving point, and know how to get somewhere by taking measure, relating to this fixed point. And that North Star is a little bit like why you came here. It can be a fixed point you guide your way by, how you carry yourself through your next week with an intention. But he said you never expect to get to the North Star. You're not going to sail your boat off the planet to the North Star. So just to know that what you'll get, where you'll go, the land you'll travel, is not defined by the place that, the goal is not where you're guiding yourself by. There are two different qualities of the journey, the intention and the journey itself. So hold your intention clear and let the journey be a welcome surprise. Thank you.
Hi. I'm Joanna, and I feel really fortunate to be in this room because I do know so many of you, and to get to give you all hugs and smiles and say hi is really exciting for me. Because I'm a fairly new teacher, and I feel like this is sort of our posse. You know, this is our sangha, this is our crew, and that's very exciting. So thank you so much for your practice and for showing up here, because this is really a courageous act to me. You know, it's like you guys had the option of Jamaica or Paris or, you know, sitting for a week in silence in your own mind, your minds. And so I find it such a huge help to my practice to see that there are other people that share in that intention and that ideal of really making a change and moving forward in some way. And sometimes people come to a practice maybe because they're in pain or they've had some kind of tragedy. And oftentimes we're looking for somewhere to go or something to grasp onto or some way to feel better. And other times we're just really finding that we're ready to take a next step in life and that there's more. There's more to find about the complexities of who we are. So for whatever reason you're here and have made this choice, I thank you deeply and I bow to you for that. And I encourage you also to just take pleasure and joy in the fact that you get to put yourself on the way. You get to park your car. You don't need to worry about feeding yourself or your computer or anything. And really just really celebrate that and take refuge in that and enjoy that in this beautiful desert that we're in and all the colors of the sky and all of the amazing animals that you'll discover running around. I always find that I have a huge fondness to Joshua Tree, but I always find that beginnings of the retreat, I see so much less than I do. By the end, everything just becomes so vibrant and alive. So just pat yourselves on the back for getting here and for being in this practice and let it unfold. Thank you.
Fight anymore. I like us figure out how to be free in each moment of letting go. So beautiful. It's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. So I'm really glad to be here with y'all. We get to practice. And you, I know we're sitting up here, but this teacher's all around you. The noisy neighbor, the person that sits down in front of you, right when you got a good view. Everything's too long getting food. You know, like, there's going to be all kinds of cats in this room that are going to be your teachers. And whenever, at any moment, whenever you think anything is wrong in any moment, it's another opportunity to let go and taste freedom. So good luck. And if you need anything, don't hesitate. This is the reason we're here, is just to support your practice. So anything you need, don't hesitate. And if you do it 5 times, we just shut the fuck up, check yourself in. We'll tell you. You don't have to worry about it. Don't hesitate. We're here to support your practice. So
I'd imagine that for thousands and thousands of years, people have been doing something like this in all different ways and all different cultures. In this context, in this lineage, in this tradition, for over 2,500 years, since the time of the Buddha, people have been taking time out of their lives to meditate, to dedicate time, energy, resources, money, putting aside their responsibilities in the world to go forth into a period of intensive practice. Sometimes it's really useful to remember, especially at the difficult times during the retreat where it feels like I can't do this, that millions of people have done this, that this is really doable. This has been done by millions and millions and millions of people for thousands of years. And you're not different, actually. Even though your mind will tell you, no, I'm different. But you're not, actually. You have the total ability and capacity to benefit from this practice, from this experience. In the time of the Buddha, when he invited people to join him, the commitment that was made to become a monk or a nun was a very simple statement that said, I go forth into homelessness. And that was the way of the Buddha, to be homeless, to be out living on the generosity of others, to let go of the responsibilities of work and home and relationships, and to dedicate full time and energy to the practice of the Dharma, not just meditation, but the whole Eightfold Path, wise actions, wise intentions, kindness and compassion and generosity. A lot of what we do here on retreat is a pseudo monasticism, that for this week you are living as a nun, as a monk, walking in the footsteps of the Buddha. You have, at some point today or yesterday, or depending on how long you were traveling to get here, you've left your home. You're temporarily renouncing the responsibility of your profession. I think it's quite useful to think of this as a monastery that you've entered. This makeshift temporary monastery that we've put together for the week for you. And that this week you live in a monastic way. Homeless, with a somewhat comfortable bed to sleep in. Not your own, just provided for you temporarily. And a huge part of the practice of homelessness and monasticism is to just accept what's offered as your practice, whether you like it or don't like it. It can be quite a revelation to realize that you cannot like something and still accept it. You can dislike something and still accept it. So here in the monastery, in the footsteps of the Buddhas, we will practice in a way that is based on kindness, that is grounded in mindfulness, present time awareness, as Mary has already informed you. In this retreat, silence, noble silence, is a huge part of the practice. It's not just a rule. It's not just a, you know, kind of guideline. It's your practice. It's part of your spiritual discipline this week to not have any unnecessary communication with anybody. And you'll see that it's a challenging practice, whether you've done it 10 times already or this is your first time doing it. It's a challenging practice. We, almost all of us, even the introverts in the room, are very conditioned to communicate, to connect with others, to look outside of ourselves for attention, to give our attention to others. The practice here is to give all of your attention to yourself. And to maintain silence, which includes not even making eye contact with the other yogis on retreat. Because there's so much communication that can happen with just a look. You don't have to say words to communicate. And the noble silence here also includes, as again Mary already told you, writing notes to each other. We ask that you don't listen to music, that you don't read books, that you don't don't do much journaling, don't do much writing. That's another, like, well, I'm just communicating with myself. That's not a, that one is, the writing one is a little bit, optional. You know, if you need to write some things down, a little bit, but you just minimize it. Don't go and spend hours working on your novel, your memoir in form of your journal. You need to take a couple notes, it's okay. But as a practice. In the monastery, in this practice, in this way, also abstaining from sexuality. So, of course, that means with each other, but it also means with yourself. To be celibate for the week. To abstain from masturbating. And it's a incredibly natural and common and totally normal experience to have sexual thoughts and feelings and fantasies on retreat. It is pretty universal. And I wouldn't say, well, don't think about sex, right? Good luck. Don't think about sex. What are you thinking about? It's not think about sex, but I would encourage you as part of your practice to watch how much you might be indulging in sexual fantasy. You're here on retreat, you get a little bored. Maybe I'll remember that one time. Or maybe I'll start planning the perfect sexual experience. In your celibacy this week, just be really aware of the tendency to lose the present time experience through indulging in sexual fantasy. It's a almost universal experience, not everybody, but so many people have, called the retreat romance. Sometimes in Vipassana retreats we call it the Vipassana romance. But that you're here on retreat, and maybe somebody that you don't even know, but you really like the way he walks, or the way she sits. You think that she is very attractive, he is very attractive. And you start to fantasize about your relationship to this guy and to this woman. Maybe you just fantasize about having sex with them. Maybe you fantasize about the relationship that you're going to build together. How they're the perfect partner for you. Forgetting that you've actually never met this person. But you just know. And you're pretty sure she likes you too. She sat next to you at lunch twice. Or did I sit next to her? I don't remember, but we got a thing going, I'm pretty sure. It's totally normal, and it's such a distraction. It's such an avoidance of feeling. I mean, it is what's happening, so it's part of your practice. But if you indulge in it, it can just take you away from what's happening. It can just be a way that you distract yourself most of the week and maybe avoid some underlying stuff. So part of the celibacy is to pay a lot of attention to how you're relating to the natural sexual thoughts and feelings that will arise. So abstaining from indulging in physical sexual activity and abstaining on one level or another from indulging in the mental sexual activity that will arise. Of course, the Buddha was straight edge. He was a drug-free revolutionary. And so here on retreat, we practice being free from intoxicating substances that will get in the way of our ability to be mindful and to be genuinely present and kind. So if you brought some weed, you can turn it in. We won't turn you in. You know, leave it in your car. If you are on prescription medication, please continue to take it. Drug-free does not mean not taking your medicine. Take your medicine, please. This is not a good time to come off of your medicine. Do that at another time under the supervision of a medical professional, if that is something that you want to do. We also practice non-killing, non-violence, non-harming. And so that means being careful where you walk so that you avoid stepping on the critters that are walking around, the ants and spiders, doing your best to not take life of any living being. Pretty fortunate out here in the desert that we don't have to deal with many mosquitoes. That's a really hard practice. When you're on retreat and the mosquitoes are just feasting on you. Not only on retreat, but in life, once you've made this vow to not kill. Out here, not too many mosquitoes, but once in a while there are some kind of bugs that bite us out here. I don't know what they're called. Not very often. So a non-violence. And like with the sexuality, also in your mind, the opposite of the vipassana or the retreat romance is the vipassana vendetta or the retreat resentment. I don't like the way that girl eats. I hate the way that guy meditates. He breathes too loud. He, she, getting stuck in a resentment on retreat because it's not the way I want it to be. They're not acting right. And so that'll happen for me. I don't, like Vinny said, I don't know what it's like in your mind, but every retreat I go to, I pick on people. I still got some of that schoolyard bully in me. In my mind, I pick on people. I don't like the way you dress. I don't like the way you walk. I don't like the way you meditate. And that aversion and resentment arises even in the silence with a whole bunch of people that are here to support my practice. So just paying attention to that and, again, trying not to indulge in it as part of this precept of nonviolence. Not that those thoughts might not arise, but there's the difference between the arising of it and the feeding it and the spending time obsessing on who we don't like and why. And who we would like to some level harm. I really wouldn't be sad if she tripped during her walking meditation. Or, you know, that spider. Don't get me, get her. Some kind of violent intentions. So silence and celibacy and nonviolence and respecting the belongings of others. You sort of carve out your little cushion, that's your space. Even though you're homeless, that's your home, that's your space. And respect, you know, and respecting other people's space. If the cushions are on someone else's seat, they're spoken for. The way that we talk about it, that the Buddha talked about it, was to not take anything that's not freely offered to you. And again, you're here in this situation where everything you need is provided. You've got the bed and the blankets and you've got the cushions. The food will be there, breakfast, lunch, dinner. So just a commitment to honesty and to respecting the space and each other. I think there's also a connection between this not taking what's not offered and the commitment to silence. That sometimes maybe you're feeling like, I like to break my silence. But when you break your silence, you're also, and speak to someone, or pass a note to someone, or look at someone, you're also breaking their silence, and you're taking their attention that maybe wasn't actually offered. You're stealing their silence by communicating with them. So consider that. If you're just feeling like you're done with the silence, you can come and talk to us or to the managers. But to really protect and respect other people's practice and retreat. Throughout the retreat, as often as you remember, you can in your own way remind yourself that however much doubt is arising or however much difficulties, if you're facing difficulties, some of you will have smooth sailing and joy and peace, and some of you will have a really bumpy ride and a roller coaster. More common to have the ups and the downs on retreat. But during the difficult times, as often as you can remember, remind yourself that this is possible. One of the traditional ways to remind ourselves that this, and when I say this, I mean freedom. I mean happiness. I mean being at ease with what is. And one of the traditional ways to do that is to take refuge in the Buddha. Is to recall that there's this possibility of awakening that's available to everyone. And to, in your own way, take refuge. Sometimes you actually say it, I take refuge in the Buddha. And not so, for me, part of it is remembering Siddhartha Gautama. And reflecting that he was just a human being, just like you, just like me. who through his own effort came to awakening. Part of it's that, but that's not the biggest part for me. The biggest part is just reflecting on this truth that there is a potential for awakening in me. Not so much about what Sid did, but in me, there's the possibility, even if I can't see it at all right now, even if my mind is convinced that it's not true, just remembering it is true for everyone, including you. Taking refuge in awakening, in the possibility, in the potential. And likewise with these teachings that we'll be offering you, the meditation instructions, the Dharma talks, the teachings of the Buddha, or what we call the Buddha's Dharma. The truth, as it was revealed by Siddhartha, it's a universal truth. It's not Buddhism. It's not just Buddhist philosophy. It's what happens when anybody pays really close attention to reality. Maybe the three main pieces to take refuge in when we talk about take refuge in the Dharma. The three main universal liberating truths are that A, whatever is happening is impermanent. And if you pay attention, you will see this is changing. And that's really good news when it sucks. Take refuge in impermanence when it's difficult. When your mind is loud and your body is uncomfortable and your heart is aching. Take refuge in the Dharma of constant change. It is good news. It will pass. It will change. Of course, impermanence is not such good news when everything's going perfectly. When you finally get that right balance of quaaludes and cocaine. Spiritual quaaludes, inside yourself. Finally get that right balance, and then you remember, oh, it's not going to last. Taking refuge in the truth of constant change. In the normalizing truth that life is difficult, that there is dukkha. That if you're having a hard time, it's not your fault, necessarily. It's part of the package of a human mind and body. There's a lot of pain. There's a lot of grief. A lot of challenges. Taking refuge in the truth that it's going to be difficult sometimes, no matter how spiritual you get. No matter how mindful you are, there is no escape from unpleasantness in this world. And that can be such an important thing to remember, because so often when life is difficult, we think, I must be doing something wrong. If I'm in pain, I must have done something wrong. When we pay attention, we realize often, I didn't necessarily do anything wrong. This isn't my fault. Life is just painful in this impermanent world when relationships end. When we stub our toe. When we don't get what we want or we lose what we had. or we get sick, or the process of aging, right? All of this stuff, it's not our fault. Take refuge in the truth that there will be difficulty and suffering and stress, and it's normal. And the third aspect of the Dharma that I find so useful to remember is connected to this. Normalizing suffering is the impersonal nature of so much of what arises in our minds. Such a trap to take everything that arises inside of your mind personal. What a setup for suffering. Taking your mind personal? How's that been working so far? A key part of the Buddha's awakening, and perhaps one of the main thing that distinguishes what the Buddha called the untrained worldlings, unenlightened people, people who don't practice mindfulness, is that normal people go around taking their mind personally their whole lives, taking everything personal, being self-centered. It's all about me. And everything that arises in my mind must be true. I am this mind. I am this body. Now, what mindfulness makes more and more clear is that we are not this mind. It's not who we are. And we're not in control of what arises in this mind. Only how we relate to it, whether we indulge in it, whether we feed it, whether we get lost and dragged downstream by it. So a key part of taking refuge in the Dharma for me is remembering impermanence and suffering and the impersonal nature of so much of what's arising inside of me and outside of me. As Wes Nisker, who Vinny and Joanna and I recently taught a retreat with up at Spirit Rock, I like to say, he said, after 40 years of deep meditation practice and looking at his mind and his body and really studying it, he said, I came up with the conclusion that I am not my fault. It's not my fault that I take things personally. That's just what the mind does. It's not my fault that I create this sense of solidity out of this impermanent process. But it's really liberating to see the mind doing that and not take it personal. Not my fault. So remember, the Buddha and the Dharma as a refuge, as a North Star, guiding us to freedom. And the third aspect of refuge here in the monastery for the week is each other, is the community. I've done many, many silent meditation retreats like this over the years, over the last 20 years. And I've had some really difficult times on some of the retreats, and I've had some really easy times on some of the retreats. Always different. But I almost always made it through with the support of others. There's a couple times I didn't quite make it. Left early. Almost always made it through with the support of others. And there's a few times in my life where I've tried to do solo retreats and go off and practice by myself, and I never made it. practicing by myself. I haven't tried it in a really long time, but in the early days, I tried to do solo retreats. So hard. Even though silent retreat in community and sangha is difficult at times, having the support, the refuge of other people who are doing what I'm doing while I'm doing it together, sitting and walking and practicing in this way, so supportive. So take refuge also in each other, in the Sangha. Remember, you're not alone. And also remember that they're not as happy as they look. So often you'll feel like, I'm the only one having a hard time on this retreat. Everyone else is totally happy, peaceful. They're fully like enlightened. They just sit there. They don't move. They don't hate everybody the way I hate everybody. They're not lusting after that girl in the third row like I am. They probably are. Maybe they're not. But we need each other, bottom line. We need to practice. We need each other to support us here in the practice. Take refuge in the Sangha. I'm not sure if it happens for everyone, but I think almost everyone at some point or another thinks about leaving. I'm curious, how many people have been on retreat before? I'm curious, have any of you been on a retreat where you never once thought, maybe this isn't right for me, maybe I should leave? That thought never arise? Never? For you, pretty confident?
Like, this sounds like I want to be here, sure, but to actually think about leaving?
Yeah. No. For me, my first retreat, like as soon as I got there, but even before I got there. So often on retreat, after maybe it was 5 years into retreat practice or so, before I started really wanting to leave every time. And I'd go, and I'd keep going, but I always wanted to leave. There was some sort of fight or flight going on in me. It's really normal to want to leave the retreat. If that happens for you, it's just doubt. It's just the doubting mind that is manifesting either as a thought and a feeling that is doubting our own capacity, I can't do this, or making up some level of excuse around, like, oh, I could do this, but it's just not the right time. My dog just died. I got to get out of here. My relationship just ended. Whatever, you know, making some doubting. Or sometimes it's a doubt in the practice itself. If this were possible, I could do it, but this just isn't possible. These guys are full of shit. And the Buddha was too. And this just isn't. This shit doesn't work because I tried for the first 6 hours of the retreat. And I really gave it my all for the first day. And now I'm going home because it doesn't work. It's just doubt. It will come for most. Relate to it with as much kindness as you can muster. I'm really happy to be here with you. Buddhist practice has changed everything about my life, except for my fashion. But everything else is different. And retreat practice, in many ways, has been the core of my Buddhist practice. There's something that happens. We get more concentrated over the days, letting go of all of the external distractions of a busy life. There's something that happens here that is so healing. I'm so happy to get to share this experience and help guide you through it. May each one of you experience whatever it is that needs to be experienced in your heart and mind in order to find the freedom that you're seeking, the well-being, the happiness. Last couple of things is, please treat this room and the whole retreat center with some level of respect and, I want to use the word sacred space, but that doesn't feel right coming out of my tongue. But I heard someone else say it, it sounded good, I don't know. But just with respect for the Sangha, when you're in the room during a meditation period, during a talk, stay in the room unless it's an emergency. And sometimes you're here and you just forgot to pee and it's an emergency. And you gotta go. And then go. It's okay to get up if you need to do, but don't do it just because you feel like it, because your mind said, you know, I'm kind of thirsty. This talk is really fucking boring. I think I'll go take a walk. Stay in the room. Show up on time. Stay to the end. A little bit of lounging is totally acceptable. But if it gets really like you're, you know, the Dharma talk's going on, you're like, this is a killer Dharma talk. Unless you have an injury, you know, if you have an injury and you need to lay down, it's completely cool to lay down. And it's really good to relax. You can relax, you can lounge, but probably don't need to lay down in here. If you need to lay down, you can go to your room and lay down. A big part of our practice here in this room is the sitting posture. This is a sitting meditation zone. Then there's the moving meditation zone, and Kira will be giving you guidance for that, and there'll be all of these walking meditation zones. And the reclining zone is in your room, is your bed. And it's okay to go and do some reclining practice. For some of you, it'll be really important to follow the schedule to the letter with complete integrity and just do every single sitting and every single walking, and that that'll actually be what is good for you. I don't believe that that's true for everyone. I think that actually some of you who are overachievers anyways, and maybe a little too, like the schedule a little too much, could probably use giving yourself a break and skipping part of the schedule and going for a hike or taking a nap. So find your own inner way with the schedule. And maybe play with it. Maybe say, you know, today I'm going to follow the schedule 100%. I'm going to do every sitting, every walking period. I'm not going to get tea every walking period the way I want to. I'm going to actually do my walking practice. And then say, you know, today I'm going to give myself that, 11:30 walking period, and I'm going to have tea, and I'm going to chill out in the sun. I'm not going to do it this time. I'm going to give myself a break. But do it consciously, rather than just following, well, I went and started walking, but then I didn't really feel like walking, so I went to my room, and I laid down for a little while, and that got kind of boring, so I started looking at my stuff. Like, oh, I have 7 pairs of socks. They're all white. Which ones organize my socks? You know what I mean? Find your way with the schedule. The first day, tomorrow, first couple days, if you need some extra sleep, sleep in. There's a, what is the first one? 6 a.m. sit? 6:30? Oh, that's easy. At least it's not like the monastery where it's 4 a.m. 6:30. If you're up, come sit. If you want to sleep in, you can sleep in for the first day. Get a little extra rest. You have a busy life. Often coming on retreat, it's like you're going 60 miles per hour and then you just slam on the brakes and there's this kind of screeching halt into silence and slowness and stillness. And so maybe you need a little extra sleep the first day or so. It's all right. There will be a 6:30 sit tomorrow. Come if that's what's right for you. Sleep in if that's what's right for you. Trust yourself. That's all I have to say to you. I know it was a lot. Welcome to the Against the Stream retreat. You'll be having interviews every other day. How many people are on their first silent retreat? Okay. And, all right, that's all I need to know. Probably most of you, most likely all of you who are on your first retreat will have a meeting with us at some point tomorrow afternoon just so we can welcome you and make sure you're settling in and understanding the practice. And then those of you who've been on retreat before will meet with us the next day on Monday. Just sit for a moment before we leave. taking refuge in the Buddha, your own potential for awakening. Taking refuge in the Dharma. In the community. Our commitment to silence, to nonviolence, to celibacy, and respect. Supporting our mindfulness. You're welcome to stay and meditate in this room. You're also welcome to go to sleep. That's it for tonight's session. If you are quite awake and you want to do some walking and sitting practice before you go to bed, please do. If you're tired and you want to go to sleep, enjoy. See you in the morning.
You have just listened to a podcast from Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society. If you'd like to make a contribution to help support these teachings, please visit againstthestream.org.